Conventional wisdom holds that LeBron James of the Miami Heat is the best basketball player on the planet. But despite all that talent, he's had some struggles on the court, most notably now in the NBA Finals against the San Antonio Spurs. James has failed to crack 20 points in any of the three games so far, and at times he's looked indecisive against a very good Spurs defense. As NPR's Tom Goldman reports, tonight's game is a moment of truth as LeBron James and the Heat try to even the series.
LeBron James began the finals secure in his title as BPP, best player on the planet. After three games, he still holds the title, but it's lost a little luster, even though things started well.
James backs it in. How do you stop that?
Game one, he had a coveted triple-double, double figures in rebounds, assists, and points, although only 18 points. Remember, this is a man who scored at least 20 in 33 games in a row this season. Game two, 17 points and other contributions as the Heat won big. Game three, 15 and no free throws by a 6'8", 250-pound man who's proved he can bull his way to the basket and get fouled anytime he wants. Yesterday, James bluntly assessed Tuesday's performance.
I'll be better.
What would better mean for you?
Better than last night. I played like...
Better than bleep means a much more aggressive performance. James is a great facilitator who constantly strives to make the best basketball play, even if that means giving up the ball. Tonight, on the road, in a must-win game, James understands it's critical to get himself going. One way is trying to break free from San Antonio's smothering half-court defense by running in the open court.
If I can get the ball in transition where I'm facing my defender or maybe just one other defender, I can kind of break their defense down.
Miami head coach Eric Spoelstra will do what he can.
We'll work to make sure that he's getting to places where he can be comfortable and confident.
Which begs the question, is James uncomfortable and lacking confidence, even after a career year in which he won his first NBA title, a fourth Most Valuable Player award, and an Olympic gold medal?
I really thought after last season when he did all these things, I thought he was past this.
Past the debacle of the 2011 finals, says ESPN NBA senior writer Mark Stein, when James shrank on the biggest stage and was described as passive and uncertain as heavily favored Miami lost to Dallas. To be fair, Stein says, the Heat are facing another Texas team, San Antonio, with championship DNA. The Spurs have won four titles since 1999, and a defense that, in hoop speak, is packing the paint, swarming James when he gets near the basket and daring him to shoot from outside. Also, Miami's other big stars, Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, are, respectively, hurting and ineffective. Still, all eyes are on James as the designated BPP. As he tries not to revert to 2011, is he in fact a flawed best player on the planet? Or, as Mark Stein wonders, is James a victim of these talkative times?
One of the most fascinating what-ifs in sports is what if Michael Jordan played in the Twitter era and we dissected his every tongue wag the way we do now with guys like LeBron. So I do feel a degree of sympathy for him there because it is such a different environment. But you're right. A player of his stature, we shouldn't be having this kind of discussion.
Get up. Yesterday, James grunted and cursed at practice as another jump shot fell short. Those will go in tonight, he says, as he works mightily to bring his team back and turn around the discussion from what ails LeBron to will Miami repeat? Tom Goldman, NPR News, San Antonio.
It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Audie Cornish. And we're nearly halfway through the year. And upstairs at NPR Music, the best of pile is high enough that they've already cobbled a list of their 25 favorite albums for 2013. It's crazy or what? For a sample, we're joined by three members of the team. Franny Kelly, who covers R&B and hip hop. Hey there, Franny.
Hey, Audie.
Tom Heisinger, who writes about classical music. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Audie.
And Stephen Thompson, who writes about, I think, everything else, right? Rock, pop.
All the other genres.
All the things we won't recognize. Stephen, welcome.
Thank you.
So looking at the list, there are a lot of established artists who made it, right? There's your Vampire Weekend and, of course, Justin Timberlake. But there's some newer artists who have kind of cut through the noise and made themselves heard. Namely, your pick, Franny, Chance the Rapper. One time it was one, two times it was two blessed.
me in the street sometimes. Shouts out to Nate.
This was the year this guy really broke through the surface. It's not his first album, but the hype for him was at fever pitch, and then he came through. So everybody was surprised by how many risks he took and by how mature he is.
And he's from Chicago, quite young. I remember his debut mixtape was based on his 10-day suspension from high school, right?
That's correct. I'm your pusher man. So this song is actually 7 minutes long, which doesn't happen very often, and that's partly because it's a combo song. It starts out playful and sort of chest popping, he's teasing, and then there's an abrupt switch. It's this big shoulder move where he drops out completely and there's 30 seconds of silence. And when he comes back, the song has become foreboding, paranoid, and it's mostly about violence in Chicago.
Are we shooting whether it's dark or not? I mean, the days is pretty dark a lot. Down here, it's easier to find a gun than it is to find a parking spot.
All of a sudden, you're sort of thrown backward by how much he's asking you to question right after he had you dancing.
All right, moving on from Chicago hip-hop to the other side of the world, to a Latvian choir. Do I have that right, Tom Heisinger?
You do.
Is that your pitch? Tell us what's going on.
Well, have you ever sung in a choir?
I have. I mean, sung would be a generous term. I don't really think that was what was going on, but yeah.
Well, I think you're going to love this record. And you might say Latvia, but it turns out that Latvia is this land of singers. I mean, the country is the size of West Virginia. 2 million people live there. But they have a reservoir of over 1 million folk songs alone. And then there's all the amateur choirs, the professional choirs, the singing competitions where 20,000 crooners get together and sing together. I mean, the people in this country just sing. And one of the best professional classical choirs now comes from Latvia. It's the Latvian Radio Choir. And on their new record, they really show just how much power 24 unaccompanied voices have. The music is by Rachmaninoff. It's his all-night vigil. This is Russian liturgical music that he wrote in 1915. The music that we're hearing now, the text is talking about beholding the very special light that comes at the end of the day when the evening starts coming. And I think you can just see in the music the warm evening light just filtering through the stained glass windows of a church. There's a purity and transparency to these Latvian voices. There's a certain ping to the blend, and the tenors have a really high, pure sound. It's really some of the most gorgeous choral singing I've heard in a while.
Stephen, one more pick, right, from a guy in the know. Now, last time I talked to you at South by Southwest, you were talking about bands with beards.
Yes.
As a trend.
That's been an ongoing concern.
Yes. Who are you betting on to make the best of list later in the year? Who's your favorite so far?
Well, actually, it's very much like a cross between the Latvian Radio Choir and Chance the Rapper.
I want to hear what this is.
No, it's not at all. The singer I'm picking is named Casey Musgraves, and she put out an album this year called Same Trailer, Different Park. There was an extraordinary amount of hype leading into this record. Franny mentioned Chance the Rapper as somebody who followed through on this enormous promise. And this record does the same thing. Casey Musgraves put out a great song last year called Merry-Go-Round. And this record, Same Trailer, Different Park, is just packed with strong, smart, thoughtful songs with a very distinct point of view. Let's hear a little bit of the song Follow Your Arrow. So bass, lots of noise.
Follow.
running through this record, there are all these recurring themes of escape. So the song Follow Your Arrow is clearly about escape from the judgment of your neighbors. The song Merry-Go-Round is about escape from a small town. There's a song called Blowin' Smoke that's about, you know, kind of wanting to escape from a crummy job. There's a lot of slices of real life, but there are also, there's a blueprint for these escapes. It's not just, oh, isn't it terrible that I'm stuck in this small town, or isn't it terrible that my neighbors judge me. It's a very inspiring record, and it's a record that I think is going to connect on a very personal level with a lot of people. I just love it, and just am enormously drawn to virtually every song on it.
Say what you think of who you love, 'cause you just get so many trips around the sun. Yeah,
well, this has been a great mix of stuff. Stephen Thompson, thank you.
Thank you.
And also NPR Music's Franny Kelly. Thanks, Franny.
Thank you, ma'am.
And Tom Heisinger. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Audie.
You can find their list of favorite albums and songs of 2013 so far at nprmusic.org. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Melissa Block. It's time now for NPR's Backseat Book Club. We know kids are out there listening at the kitchen table or in the backseat of the car. So we find middle grade books for ages 9 to 14 to read together, and then we meet the author. This month's pick, The One and Only Ivan by Catherine Applegate, features a gorilla who spent 27 years in a shopping mall in Tacoma, Washington. NPR's Michelle Norris tells us more.
The One and Only Ivan is based on a real-life gorilla who finally made his way to the Atlanta Zoo. And so we headed to the National Zoo here in Washington, D.C. to meet author Catherine Applegate. We chatted with her near the fenced yard behind the Great Ape House. While there, a black gorilla was munching on breakfast, fistfuls of greenery.
Oh, look. Hello.
You almost expect him to wave back.
They're absolutely listening.
Do you think that there's something unusually special about watching gorillas because their fine motor movements are so close to our own? I mean, he's reaching for grass and leaves there in the way that we would reach for toast.
Exactly, or in my case, coffee. Absolutely. You're right, their manual dexterity. It's so human. I think, though, it's the eyes that get me. That penetrating gaze, that intelligence. It's hard not to be anthropomorphic when you're looking at a great ape, at any primate. But especially with gorillas, they're just so magnificent.
When we sat down to talk about the book, we began where the book begins. The opening chapter of The One and Only Ivan is unusual. It's succinct and direct, like a handshake.
It reads, "Hello, I am Ivan. I am a gorilla. It's not as easy as it looks."
Not easy because Ivan lives far from the wild at the Exit 8 Big Top Mall and Video Arcade. Not easy because he's lonely, though he does have a few loyal friends, including a highly opinionated dog, an aging elephant, and eventually a baby elephant who sets his life on an entirely new course. And Ivan's life is not easy because he's always on display. But Ivan is watching all those people who watch him, and his observations about humans are among the biggest delights in this book. Applegate says she long wanted to write a story about animals in captivity.
Ivan's story was so compelling and so bizarre. The fact that he had been captured as an infant from the Democratic Republic of the Congo and brought to Tacoma, Washington, to live in a mall for almost
a shopping mall.
It was beyond comprehension. And when I first came across this story in the New York Times, the headline read, "Gorilla Sulks in Mall as his future is debated. This was about 20 years ago. They were trying to figure out what to do with this guy. And I thought, oh, there's a story there. I just have to figure out how to tell it.
We have questions from our listeners. It's one of the wonderful things about the Backseat Book Club is the people who read these books, the younger people who are in all those backseats, send us their questions. This is from a student named Olivia. I'm Olivia Biggs. I'm 8 years old. And have you actually met Ivan?
I tried to meet Ivan. I went to the zoo. I took my 13-year-old daughter. She was about 10 at the time. And it was a very wet day. Ivan hated wet weather. And he never came out. And I sat there for hours in the rain, and my daughter was looking at me going, are you crazy, Mom? But
hours?
Well, I'd flown all the way to Atlanta. I was determined to see him. But, you know, at the end of the day, I realized this guy actually had some control over his environment. In the old days, would he have been able to go anywhere to make a choice like that? And it was really validating. I was okay that he couldn't come out. I did go to his memorial service later, though.
His memorial service, mm-hmm. when he died.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
His keeper, Jody Kerrigan, told stories about Ivan. He was quite a character. Liked to wear a sombrero. He hated to walk around in wet weather, so he would carry around a burlap coffee bag and stick it under his butt and slide around on the grass that way. He was not shy about making his needs known.
While we were here at the zoo, during our interview, we had an interesting moment. We stopped for a minute to change the battery on our recording equipment. And while we were doing that, a young reader, someone who overheard our conversation, saw the book, The One and Only Ivan, seated on the bench and walked up and introduced himself to Catherine Applegate. His name is Sean Kramer. He's from Evergreen, Colorado. And we decided to let him ask his own question.
How did you start getting into writing?
I think all writers write from the time they're really young. And you just start asking the question, what if? You know, what if you were sitting here next to me and you turned into a cat? I have a story. So I was writing at a really young age, but it took me a long time to be brave enough to become a published writer or to try to become a published writer. It's a very public way to fail. And I was kind of scared. So I started out as a ghostwriter, and I wrote for other series like Disney, Aladdin, and Sweet Valley, and books like that. Mm-hmm. And then my husband, Michael Grant, and I started a series called Animorphs about kids who can turn into animals. And that was our big first success.
We're so glad we ran into you. Thank you.
I'll send you your $50.
What do you want young readers to take from this?
I think we have a real obligation when we do have animals in captivity to understand their needs and to care for them as well as we can. Stella, the elephant in Ivan, says, you know, humans surprise you sometimes. And I hope that the next generation can surprise us all.
That was Catherine Applegate talking about her Newbery Award-winning book, The One and Only Ivan. While we had fun at the zoo, it's time for us to zoom back in time to the summer of 1964.
Some kids born with a silver spoon. I guess that I was born a little too soon.
Man, is it hot in Hanging Moss, Mississippi when the swimming pool is closed. Read Glory Be by Augusta Scattergood. That's our next book. Join us in NPR's Backseat. Send us your questions to backseatbookclub@npr.org or tweet us at NPR Backseat. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm telling you, I said you better beware, because I've had my share.
Time now for StoryCorps, the project capturing the stories of everyday people. On this Father's Day weekend, we'll hear from a foster dad. In 2004, Horace Atwater Jr. took in Adrian Hawkins, who was a teenager at the time. Here, Horace remembers when they first met.
You were this little skinny kid, about 14. You didn't really have any clothes. You had mismatched socks.
I remember times being hungry, seeing drugs and all kinds of stuff. I mean, some things had to happen for me to be in foster care, but I'm glad it was with you.
Thank you. I'm glad you're with me, too.
Why do you care so much for a stranger?
I had a personal experience where I lost everything, a wife, two fine sons, because of drug addiction and anger. I didn't experience my own sons growing up. I would only see them on visitation periods. But when my wife remarried, she married a man that embraced my sons as though they were his own. He has been an excellent father to them, and I am so grateful that he embraced them the way he did. I'm also grateful for the opportunity that I had to embrace you. So that's the least that I owe, the least I could do.
I mean, you know, you had it good at one time, and I know you messed it up, but you're the most influential person in my life. Like, I'm just glad that I met you.
I am so glad that you came into my life, and you're doing so well. You know, it makes me look like I'm smart, but you're the one who's smart. God, for you to become the man that you are, I am so proud of that.
Horace Atwater Jr. with his foster son, Adrian Hawkins, at StoryCorps in Atlanta, Georgia. Adrian is now a senior in college studying biology. He still talks to Horace every day. Their interview will be archived at the Library of Congress. Get the podcast at npr.org.